There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
The Ticket's film critic and the man with the best job in the world, flying from A to B to interview film stars and directors, William Mullally. He's here to talk movies.
Real time.
Good to have you back, William, from the Cannes Film Festival, no less.
Yes, indeed. I'm rushing here and there, rushing into the studio as well. I think traffic jams are nature's way of forcing out-of-shape film critics to exercise. Because most of the time I'm sitting on a plane marathoning some show that's coming out in a few weeks. And this year at Cannes, it was really fantastic. I was able to go to my first Variety yacht party.
Oh,
which
very
was
nice.
You know, that's like the essential Cannes experience. You know, you go out on those yachts, and it was exactly like every other party where I don't know anyone.
I bet a lot of people knew you though, didn't they?
I mean, there were definitely so many people from around the region. There weren't too many press, but so many different people, especially visiting the Saudi Arabia Pavilion, because it's the first time Saudi has ever gone to Cannes. They've opened up. They had a huge announcement on Friday that they're going to be providing incentives. They're opening up cinemas. They're opening up to have international projects come in. A lot of projects being announced, including by friends of mine. So it was really a fascinating place to be. Even John Travolta stopped by just yesterday.
Oh, did he?
That's my favorite,
friend
John Travolta. Yeah, I love him.
He's looking good. He's got like a... you know, gray hair he's sporting now. He's still got the moves. He was dancing on stage at Cannes, so I think he was having a tremendous time.
Didn't have the white suit on from Saturday Night Fever, then.
No, I borrowed that. It's mine now.
In terms of the movies, what was the big buzzer, you know, at Cannes? What were some of the big films?
Oh, although at Cannes this year, I read that you weren't allowed to go and see the films before the gala, which was the first time they'd ever done that, so that the critics couldn't pan the film before the stars had to walk the red carpet that night.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How'd that feel?
It was okay. And then the other thing was I didn't bring a tux, so I couldn't go to the galas.
You're kidding?
Yeah, I mean, I even offered to iron my jeans, but no, that's not enough.
Did you forget or did you just not take one?
I mean, I was just so focused on all the things I had to do. I barely had time to watch the screenings to begin with. I do think Cannes is a place that is supposedly about watching films, but it's more about the entire thing. It's the biggest film market in the world. So this is where every single deal in the world is made. This is where films are sold. This is where people are signed. This is where... really, careers are born if you're meeting the right people. So it's the most essential event for film, and the films themselves oftentimes come secondary. But there were some tremendous films that were shown this year. I'm really looking forward to a lot of them. I wasn't able to catch Cold War, which is a new film by the director of Ida, the Polish film, which looks fascinating. And there's so many other films. I mean, even Han Solo was premiering there.
Yeah. Any celebrity spotting, William?
No, I mean, I wasn't looking for... I mean, just people on the red carpet. I don't even count that. There's Cate Blanchett in the distance, yeah. But it was funny to see at all the hotels, there's just people lined up seeing who's going to walk in and out. Some people are just sitting in the cafe pretending to have a coffee for hours just to try to catch a glimpse of some massive celebrity.
It must be a really fun atmosphere to be there, like, involved in all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I just had too much to do to really bask in it.
Next time, can you take Mark and I and we'll go watch the films?
Oh, yeah. You guys go do the fun part.
Okay.
I'll do all the work.
How was the weather?
Good.
Weather was gorgeous. I left right before it started to rain. So it was just, it was tremendous. I was even like light jacket weather. It was perfect.
Nice.
In other movie news this week, Danny Boyle has a new film coming out.
He does. Who's done films like Millions, Trainspotting, Trainspotting 2, Slumdog Millionaire. He's doing a film that I don't think it's a Beatles film, but it's certainly inspired by the Beatles.
It's got the best story of all time. I chuckled out loud. It's rare, you know, when you read a story to chuckle out loud. So this guy suddenly wakes up to find he is the only person in the world to remember the music of the Beatles. How good is that? Can you imagine? Going around singing the music of the Beatles and people going,
yeah, what are you singing? I've never heard that song.
I don't know what you're talking about, mate.
Can't buy
Sometimes
me a
Sometimes it feels like that in Dubai, honestly.
Hard day's night.
Depending on who you're hanging out with.
But I said this to my husband and he said, it's a one-liner at best.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, you never know. I think one of the things that's really made Danny Boyle's career stand out is that he's not a director who has a certain type of film that he's done. He seemed like he might have, you know, with his early 90s films, but he'll do comedies, he'll do thrillers, you know, he'll do horror films with zombies. And I do think that since this is written by Richard Curtis, who also did things like Blackadder and Love Actually, it will definitely have a more... warm vibe that we're used to from Richard Curtis film than maybe some of the darker Danny Boyle films.
And it's called Gorleston Concert. Is that right, the name of the film?
I don't know if that's the title. Hopefully that's not the final title. I hope they come up with something better.
You wouldn't think that. How would you connect that with the Beatles?
Yeah, Richard Curtis's film, The Boat That Rocked, had six different titles depending on where it was released in the market.
Ah, okay, I see. So it's due for release in September, so it might get a different, more official name nearer the time. However, what struck me about this story was that they had asked, they needed about 5,000 people, and they ended up getting 7,400 people to sign up to be in a concert as an extra, but they wanted them to do it for free. And when I saw that, I thought, isn't that a bit cheeky, asking people to work for free?
But they're getting great exposure, you guys.
Oh, whatever.
So much exposure. You're going to be at IMDb.
But, I mean, these guys aren't professional actors, are they? It can be pretty much anybody, can it? To be
my father did that. My father did that back in the day. He used to be an extra in films. He was the extra. It was one of, I think, 30,000 people they had in the King Kong remake that was ill-fated that came out in 76. He was also in a Filipino superhero film in which he played the American tourist who had one line, which was, there's too many snakes in my hotel room. So I do think there's a career to
be made. It happened
in
Dubai as well when
unpaid.
They did the Bond movie, didn't they? In Dubai, was it the Bond movie where they needed extras? Or was it Mission Impossible, one of them?
Yeah, Mission Impossible.
Yeah, yeah. Where they needed extras. Quite a few people that I knew actually went over to one of the hotels on the Palm and were filmed.
Would you do it for free?
I think I would, probably.
I definitely would not.
Really a film buff and wanted to be in a big title film, why not?
Never. Not in a million years. They've got a budget for this, guys. They shouldn't be asking people to work for free.
Yeah, but I think there's always going to be people who are willing to do it, so that's all that answers that.
But does that then ruin it for the people whose career it is to be an extra?
Oh, for sure, but that's capitalism, baby.
There is a new film that is quite soon. Well, I see it's coming out soon. We've got the trailer for the new film. We've been waiting for it for a long time. The new Queen biopic.
Yes. I think starring and a man of Egyptian descent, I think a lot of people are really excited about this film. And it has had some controversy, I think, because it is a very sensitive story, and he's such a beloved character, Freddie Mercury, for so many different people. And there's, you know, identity issues, there's race issues, and there's so much here that it's really hard to capture all of that, especially in a trailer. So I do think that a lot of people were angry about this first trailer, but I'm still really interested in seeing Rami Malek in this part.
But, well, of course, Sacha Baron Cohen was originally slated to play Freddie Mercury, wasn't he? And I thought when he left, when he said he wasn't going to do it anymore, that would be the death of the film.
I mean, I think it'd probably be better to have a good actor. I mean, Sacha is a very funny guy.
But
do you want to see him like in a dramatic role?
Yes. He's incredible. Yeah, super talented.
Let's give him like a really small indie that nobody has to see. Let's not put him in, you know, this gigantic role definitive artist.
He did not get fired. He actually walked away from the project. Director Brian Singer got fired earlier this year from the film.
Yeah, well, he's got his own personal issues to sort out.
Sacha Baron Cohen, when he quit, he said that they were making... Well, he had hoped that they were not going to be making a PG-friendly life of the guy who was the front man before Adam Lambert, because it wasn't a PG life. But he said that's the road they were going down, which is why he quit. Should we be excited about this film, or is it just going to be vanilla?
I'm happy with anyone who fires Bryan Singer, so I'm still looking forward to it.
Let's take a listen to the trailer.
So now what? This is when the operatic section comes in.
Oh, the operatic section, yeah.
Mamma mia, mamma mia!
Mamma mia, let me go! Beelzebub has a devil put aside for me, for me, for me!
It goes on forever, 6 minutes.
I pity your wife if you think 6 minutes is forever.
Are you excited about the new Queen film? You can let us know on 01. When do you think it'll be out in cinemas here, William?
It should be coming out this fall, I believe. So keep your eyes peeled, or it's announced when the release date will be in the UAE.
Real time. Yeah, William Mullally joins us fresh from the Cannes Film Festival to talk everything movie-related. And there's always a big one, always a movie that we put on top of the list each and every week. And what's it going to be this week?
This week it is Deadpool 2.
Another Marvel film.
Yes, this one's Marvel and Fox, which may eventually just be Marvel once the deal between 21st Century Fox and Disney goes through to, you know, buy it and swallow all of those characters back into the proper Marvel universe. But for now, it's still separate. So there are, you know, cheeky references here and there to the Marvel films, but it is very much in the X-Men universe.
We seem to be getting a lot of these Marvel films at the moment, don't we?
Every week. It's the big one every week. What if you don't like them? I feel like there isn't much else.
Yeah, it's insane because, okay, so we have this one this weekend.
Yeah.
And then in 4 weeks, we have Incredibles 2. And then 3 weeks after that, we have Ant-Man and the Wasp, the next Marvel film. And then 3 weeks after that, we have Teen Titans Go to the Movies. And then in October, we have Venom. And then 6 weeks after that, we have Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Then 1 week after that, we have Aquaman. And then 3 weeks after that, we have Hellboy. And then 3 weeks after that, we have Dark Phoenix. And then 3 weeks after that, we have Captain Marvel.
Make it stop!
Yeah, they must not go on any holidays at Marvel, I think. Sorry, you can't have your weekend off. You got to work.
Doesn't it take the shine off?
I think, people have been reading comic books, you know, religiously for most of the last 100 years. And if you're following those sorts of stories, you buy them every single week and you never really get sick of them. There's people that have been reading Spider-Man for 50 years at this point. So I do think that since they're going for the comic book model, it's always just one continuing story and people get on and get off at their leisure. I do think at some point it's going to burn off, but it just, these films go higher and higher. And I do think that they're not made for every person to see every single one. I'm probably one of the only people listening that's going to see every single one of those films. Especially, I was thinking I could skip Teen Titans Go, but Nick Cage is playing Superman, so I got to see it.
It's got to be done, hasn't it? World's greatest actor. Yeah.
But yeah, so Deadpool, I do think, though, is one that is sort of comments on that in its own way. This is a film that was always sort of a cheeky send-up of the rest of the superhero genre. Deadpool, the character, was created in the late 1980s to be a wisecracking, breaking the fourth wall, turning to the camera and winking at it sort of character who makes fun of everything that's going around him, makes fun of himself, and that character continues here. We did see this character originally played by Ryan Reynolds in the X-Men spin-off, X-Men Origins Wolverine, in which he wasn't Deadpool at all and he was incredibly boring, and we thought we'd never see the character again. They actually leaked the test footage onto Reddit just to get people interested in the first one. It worked. It became a worldwide phenomenon. It became the biggest grossing 18 plus film of all time.
I liked it. I really enjoyed Deadpool 1.
It was a phenomenon. Slow build that we got out of that. So I think with this one, he's an established property, and the question is, can they tell those jokes twice and have people laugh just as hard?
Yeah, don't ruin him. That's all I'm asking.
Yeah. Let's have a listen into the trailer then. Deadpool 2.
We're getting close. You all know the drill. Intercept the convoy. Watch out for Cable. Hit it! There's this kid. He's in trouble.
Move or die.
Pump the hate brakes, Thanos. I ain't letting Cable get to him. But I can't do this alone.
We need backup. We're gonna form a super duper group. It's time to get back on LinkedIn.
Meet Bedlam. My name's Shatterstar.
Domino, I'm Lucky.
Luck isn't a superpower.
It's certainly not very cinematic.
Yes, it is.
Let's meet in the middle and say no, it isn't.
What age range is Deadpool 2 for, William?
So I was actually sitting with Cameron Mitchell, from the CEO of Vox Cinemas in Cannes. We were talking about this. In the UAE, it's completely uncut. There's no cuts whatsoever. There were some cuts we saw for the last Deadpool. This time, there's nothing. And to do that, they've made it 18 plus. But if you want to go to Oman, you want to bring your kids, it's 12 plus there with a few cuts. No word yet on whether it's going to release in Saudi Arabia. But yeah, so that's really the breakup here. It is 18 plus, definitely not for the little ones.
Ryan Reynolds, of course, he plays Deadpool. Here he is talking about that character.
Deadpool, if you think about it, is a, you know, he's a Canadian mercenary with, lead pipe cruelty, and he's morally flexible, and he's, you know, he's got cancer, and he's kind of hideously scarred, and he's, you know, these are all sort of items that a lot of studios wouldn't necessarily be anxious to put up on the screen, you know, particularly in this kind of universe, but in the X-Men kind of brand, you know, but they did. Here we are, and I'm pretty damn grateful to be here. Deadpool has kind of like a unlimited pop culture canon at his disposal at any moment, you know, and I think that's what makes him interesting. For me, it's everything that he talks about are, you know, elements of things that really affected me as a kid, and you know, some of his sort of sitcom references or song references or everything right up until present day. So he's kind of a, at least in the comic book world, a kind of a man of our era.
That's Ryan Reynolds then, who plays Deadpool. Thanks for your text, Alistair. You say the Deadpool 1 trailer made the film look bad, but the film was awesome. The Deadpool 2 trailer makes the film look really bad. I hope the film is good, but I'm a little bit skeptical.
Well, here's the thing. I'm not necessarily the best person to tell you this because I didn't really like the first one. I think Ryan Reynolds doesn't play Deadpool. Ryan Reynolds plays Ryan Reynolds. So if you think Ryan Reynolds is funny and charming, it's his show. It's his jokes. He actually gets a screenwriting credit here because I'm sure he ad-libs most of the film. And it does get a bit tiresome. It does feel a lot like watching later seasons of Family Guy where there's a lot of jokes happening and you know that like this is a humorous situation, but it's not actually making me laugh at all. I'm sure it'll get you once or twice, but it does feel like a lot that they put into this film. It may, some of the choices made the plot choices feel like they're just going to be undone later, so why care about them? And so it didn't really work for me. I was checking my phone a lot to see what time it was, but I felt that way in the first one too. So I would like to hear if people were able to catch the advanced screening, if they love the first one, if they love this one as well.
Put your dirhams where your mouth is. Is it worth your 35 dirhams this week?
For me, I would say no. I think there's some stuff coming out on Netflix that I might stay home for, and there's some other offbeat films that I think you should be catching up on.
There's one for the kids that we're going to get to next. The adults will like it as well, especially William's mum, because it was her favourite book as a kid. Real time. William, this next movie we're going to talk about is for children, I guess, but also adults will like it, and there'll be some nostalgia depending on how old you are.
Yeah, this is actually a film that I was really, really looking forward to. It came out in the US earlier this year, and it's from the director of Selma. Did you guys see Selma? The story of Martin Luther King Jr.?
No,
I missed that.
Missed
one.
It.
Tremendous. Like, that's one of the best films that's been made this decade.
It's on my catch-up list.
She's a tremendous talent. She's proven that on her television show, Queen Sugar, in her other films. Here, she's doing something completely different. She's moving up to do this gigantic, big-budget CGI film based on this classic children's novel by Madeleine L'Engle. And it's the story of a young girl who finds a way to travel to another planet. And it's very sci-fi fantasy. It's also very moralistic. It's a great story and great book to get your kids. It's got a great woman empowering spirit to it. So I do think this is a film that was always ripe to be made on the big screen. But it didn't get great reviews and didn't have great feedback when it first came out.
You know, really nice story behind this. The director who you're talking about there, Catherine Hand. So she read this story when she was when she was 10 years old.
Yeah.
And it really, she'd gone through terrible times. It had really lifted her up and helped her see the light ahead. And she thought to herself, it could do the same thing for other children. And I would like the story to be out there. So she wrote a letter to Walt Disney because he was the guy who could make it. And she never sent it. She put the letter away in her bedroom, never sent the letter. And he died 3 years later. And she said to herself, I'm going to make that film one day.
Yeah, oh, what a story.
That's the producer, actually, not the director, Ava DuVernay.
No, Catherine Hahn, producer.
Yeah, producer.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think, yeah, it's a labor of love, absolutely, for everyone involved. I do think Ava DuVernay is also a person who grew up on this book. She probably didn't write any letters to Walt Disney, so it doesn't have as good of a story as her producer does. But I do think everyone involved, from Oprah Winfrey to Reese Witherspoon, Mindy Kaling, it's a really diverse cast. It's a really, I think, powerful story. So I'm really hoping that I love it as well, because I do know that they didn't have much faith in this film and they chose not to release it in a lot of markets because they just didn't think that audiences would want to see a film like this.
With Oprah Winfrey and Reese Witherspoon, I would watch anything that Reese Witherspoon does.
Yeah, I mean, they just didn't think that anyone in Dubai would care. So I do think if this is a story that you would support, bring your sons and your daughters to this film and prove them wrong.
Let's have a listen in on the trailer then. Wrinkle in Time.
What if we are here for a reason? What if we are a part of something truly divine? Imagine 91 billion light years traveled like that. Sweet dreams are
made of this. Your father has accomplished something extraordinary. Also dangerous. He's trapped by a darkness that's actively spreading throughout the universe. And the only one who can stop it is you. Be a warrior.
I'll try.
You're going to be tested every step of the way. Trust nothing.
Darling, time for dinner. Are you lost?
The trailer, therefore, Wrinkle in Time, which is in cinemas this week. It's one for the kids. I think the grown-ups will like it as well. It sounds like it's got a great soundtrack as well.
Sweet Dreams.
I really want to like it. I think it can sometimes be difficult for especially independent, grounded directors who are great at, you know, smaller scale films and character work to move to a gigantic CGI epic. I do think sometimes they get lost in those sorts of films. I really hope that's not the case for Ava DuVernay, because I do think she's incredibly talented. And her next project is actually, she's moving over to the DC Universe. She's going to go take on the next superhero film. She's going to be doing the New Gods.
Another superhero film.
Back to the superheroes.
Yeah.
Now,
I just want to say, Oprah Winfrey, what she said about this film.
Oh, go on.
She said, I felt like we were making the new Wizard of Oz for another generation. When I told you that, you sighed, William Mullally.
Yeah, because it kind of flopped. Not the worst flop of all time, but it made less than it cost to make. And that's never a great sign for a film.
Maybe Dubai can turn it around.
Yeah, maybe it can. Now, Levi Miller is in this film. And here he is talking about what an incredible set it was on the movie.
He plays a little boy.
It felt like I was on a different planet. I guess Uriel, it would be. The rolling hills, the flowers. Because there's this portrait mode on my phone. I know I have my camera with me. There's this portrait mode, and there were all these flowers, beautiful, beautiful flowers, and there was a flower pinker. It's like I saw colors that popped more than you'll see anywhere else, and I took so many photos. It was photogenic. It was like something that I'd never seen before, and it was like something that I can't imagine many people would have been able to see before. It was incredible. The theme of the film is fighting the darkness and keeping the light. And like my character, Calvin, he has a lot of light. He's a very, very kind guy, like as I said before. He always tries to be a nice person because, I mean, he knows what it's like to not be treated nicely. And so it's this sort of, I guess what we always try to be, treat people how you wish to be treated, and he wishes to be treated.
That's Levi Miller, who, if I'm right, plays the classmate of the little girl, who's the main character in Wrinkle in Time.
So he's Calvin O'Keefe, who's a close friend of Meg Murray, who's the gifted young girl who travels to these other worlds.
I feel like you haven't really given us a definite spend your 35 dirhams here yet, and we're not going to get it on this film either.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't screened it here for critics. They haven't pushed it. They held off for months on releasing it here and held it for Ramadan. So I don't think they have great confidence in it. I do still want to see this. I do still want to like this film, but I can't endorse it when there's so many signs of a film that a studio does not have faith in.
Youch, Alistair has texted on 4001 and he's asked, where can you find out whether a film has been censored or not? He said, I want to see what the director intended. I prefer not to spend my money on films that have been cut.
You might not like this answer, but the easiest way is to ask me, because it's my job to find these things out.
And you are on Twitter, and we can get you there anytime.
At WH Mullally with four L's.
Fantastic.
Four L's. I've been spelling your name wrong every week.
Have you really?
No, I've been putting four L's. We're going to be coming back. We've got something that's going to be showing on Netflix.
Mm-hmm. 13 Reasons Why.
Yes, it's the second season of this. I did not invest in the first season. I watched the first two and then I discovered who the director was and I jumped out. Although I saw a tweet that you did the other day and you were raving about it, and I had to message him and say, is this sarcasm? Because I can't tell.
I really like this show. I do. I'm willing to finally tell the world that I really like this show.
Amazing. I'm going to have another show for you, which is less teenager, more grown-up bank heist.
Real Time.
Now, a lot of people would argue, wouldn't they, that Netflix is not talking movies, especially Helen Mirren. She would argue it, but we like to include it sometimes because there's some great stuff on Netflix and you don't always have to go out.
Steven Spielberg as well was someone who was saying that they don't count as movies.
Yes, they do. And I love Netflix series.
And I do think they're just more relevant for a lot of people. I do think that now if you're going to a social function and you're talking about, have you seen this movie? You're a lot more likely to have people say, have you seen this new Netflix show?
Yeah. Do you think they've hit cinemas pretty, you know, where it hurts?
No, I do think that there's enough balance for both. I do think it's probably hit normal TV. I think people aren't going to go home and just watch whatever's on. They're going to sit there and get into the next series.
I think so too. It's not like film was the typewriter and Netflix is the computer, is it? It's more like Netflix is the television and film was the radio. Like, people still listen to radio as well.
Yeah.
It's not like it's going to completely disappear, film, because we've now got Netflix.
No, for sure. And the cinema experience is just unparalleled. And I do think sometimes that hurts it when a film like Annihilation gets on Netflix, which a lot of people saw, which is one of the benefits, I think, of Netflix. Everyone saw Annihilation internationally. In the US, nobody saw it because it was only in theaters. So I do think that that barrier creates just an openness. And I think when shows like 13 Reasons Why show up or like Stranger Things show up, everyone talks about them. And that's an amazing feeling.
Although I am worried that Netflix is turning you into a teenager.
Well, I've always been a big fan of great teenage shows. I do think that starts, you know, with My So-Called Life, along with Freaks and Geeks, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Veronica Mars. And I do think one of the things that really clicks for me in watching season one of 13 Reasons Why is that it is Veronica Mars. It is all of those shows. It captures all the best things that I like about the best teen shows. And even though I was really hesitant to get into it in the first place, now that I appreciate the show, it has a lot of things that I like about good movies and good TV. Characters who are very well drawn, you know, feel very realistic and also are never too good or too bad. You're never sure whether or not you're going to like them or hate them. And that changes sometimes episode to episode. And you always want to find out what happens next. And there's an empathy to this show that I really respond to.
All right, let's have a listen in on the trailer then. 13 Reasons Why. You can catch it on Netflix.
Season 2.
I felt like this whole thing was going to be over. But it's not.
How far does the dark go?
What are you going to do about that?
You don't know what was happening in this photo. You don't know what happened after.
We're all in this together now.
Don't you know about what goes on at this school?
This is proof of who they all are.
The truth doesn't always make things right.
It's gonna keep happening. It doesn't stop.
There is nothing left worth having except justice for our daughter.
I can't count on anyone else anymore. I have to do this myself.
You don't.
No one's gonna get justice for her.
13 Reasons Why, when the first season came out, it came in for a lot of criticism because it portrayed a young girl who took her own life. And you say that was open to interpretation, which is dangerous when you are providing a television show that you want teenagers to watch and engage with.
I think the one big mistake that they made is they didn't have enough discretion or viewer discretion warnings about, you know, what's going to be here and which episodes had the hardest to watch content. Because the point of the show is to show things that actually happen unflinchingly, you know, really show them and get into the issues that people have to deal with. And when you do that, it's going to be difficult for the people who have had to deal with those exact same issues. But I do know people who have struggled with mental health issues themselves, and they really found the show to be a deterrent, and they found it to be something empowering. So I do think that it's not going to be for everyone, but I do think that for the right person, it's going to be something that might help them change their mind.
So the storyline in season two, does it follow what happened in season one, or is it a completely different storyline now?
Well, so the layout of the story was, so this girl takes her life and then tells the story of why exactly she did that, talking about, you know, the different people in her life that let her down. And after everyone finds out about that, the question is, does it change any of them? You know, if someone tells you that, if someone tells you what was wrong with your behavior, do you actually change? Do you just lean into yourself and get worse? Do you go straight forward into fixing things, or do you run away and try to get away from your responsibilities? And I do think watching this town heal is what makes this second season really valuable, as well as seeing other people's own side of the story, as we didn't get everything, as we heard everything from Hannah's perspective in that first season.
I'm not sure it leaves room for a season three, does it?
I think I talked to creator Brian Yorkey, and he told me actually that he does feel like he's going to wait until the season's over and decide whether it could keep going. But I do think that these are characters, and I do think as the show went on, it became less about Hannah, it became more about these kids. And I realized I cared about basically every single one of them on the show, and I still do, and I want to find out, now that I've seen almost all of season two, what happens next.
So you said you spoke to the creator. What did he have to say?
I did. I spoke to the creator, and I spoke to Catherine Langford, who stars as Hannah, and Dylan Minnette, who stars as Clay. Both of them have become huge, gigantic stars. When I was in Rome with them, actually, there were lines outside the block. There were kids lining up for everywhere trying to see these two. And we talked about how he just had a concert in London and how big of a fan she is of that, as well as what really fulfilled them in coming back for this second season.
Well, I think that the reaction that the show got, you know, told us a couple things. It told us that there were an awful lot of people who were really engaged with these characters, who felt like we did, like we had fallen in love with these characters and we wanted to know what happened next. And it also, I think, rededicated us to telling the story as honestly as we could and as truthfully as we could, because I think we felt, obviously there's pressure there, you know, a lot of people are going to be watching it. But I think the more important thing is, like, we have to keep doing the thing that we did before, which is tell the stories that we believe are important to tell, tell them as well as we can, with as much truthfulness as we can.
What's the most challenging aspect of this season?
You know, Jessica's story, one of the things that, you know, we really helped us really know we wanted a season two is we wanted to know what happened to Jessica. At the end of season one, she's just beginning the process of coming to terms with the fact that she's a victim of sexual assault. And we wanted to see her make that journey from victim to survivor. That's an incredibly difficult journey that many, many women and girls go through in their lives in the real world, so we wanted to get that right. We wanted to do justice by it. We wanted to tell it in a compelling way so that people who didn't know that journey would come to understand it, but we also wanted to do it in a way that was honoring what people went through, so that if someone was going through it, they would see themselves reflected in it and wouldn't see just some sort of, you know, Hollywood version of it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and the way this is, you know, laid out, we have certain characters who in a lot of ways it feels like their stories have been resolved, and other characters who you do have, you know, a lot more story to tell. So how do you balance those aspects and make sure all
characters... Well, if you think about it, for every story Hannah told, there's another version, right? For every person on that tape, there's their side of the story. So a big part of season two is, you know, through the trial of Hannah Baker's parents suing the school district, each of those kids is going to be called to the stand to tell their own story. Will they tell the truth? What will they tell us that Hannah left off the tape? So I think there's a lot more for us to learn about what went on, and also about who Hannah was.
Brian Yorkey there, the creator of 13 Reasons Why. Season 2 is out now on Netflix if you saw Season 1 and you're interested in seeing the second season. You caught up with these guys. Was it over Skype, William?
No, it was in person. I was hanging out with them, and it was actually, all three of us were exhausted. They were ordering espressos. I'm not important enough to be yelling at people to bring me espressos. And he just had a concert in London, and she was a big fan of them as well. And you'll also hear some bloopers as you listen to this. He was moving in his chair and making farting noises, which completely threw off Catherine. So we actually had a great time, not just interviewing, but also just sitting there and hanging out with each other.
Oh, yeah. We did two. The first one was cool. The second one was our best ever. Like, it was really, really fun.
Awesome.
Yeah, the crowd was insane. Yeah, it was really great.
Have you been to see them?
Yeah, but not internationally yet.
Like, hey, it was our first internet. Well, we've done Canada, but...
You saw us in Canada.
I did.
Yeah, you did see us internationally. Yeah.
I did. Yeah. I'm their biggest fan. I'm secretly going to every show.
So what was the most fulfilling part of going back to this world and going back to these characters?
For me, the most fulfilling part was getting to spend time with all these guys again. Like, it was great to go and, you know, I don't particularly enjoy filming away from home. I like to be home. So, and we film, and I mean, she's really far away from home. When we shoot, I'm not as far. But, you know, so what makes it comfortable for me is just being around, we all have such great friendships and relationships now. So just being around each other is really great. And also when you become so invested in a character after... Mm-hmm. That was the chair, I promise.
Sure.
Yeah, when you become so invested in a character after 6 months of like living with him, like in season one, I was just really curious and interested to see what happens with him next. And I feel really attached to Clay in that way, that I just feel like if some of Clay's journeys aren't complete, for him, then they're not complete for me. Then, like, Dylan isn't complete for me. I, like, have to complete some. I'm not making sense, but does that make sense?
It makes sense. Okay, I'm with you.
Thanks. Thanks.
We're on,
cool.
We're both in that tired
way. Yeah. Cool.
How about for you, Catherine?
I totally feel you lost me in your
my chair movement.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I totally forgot that question. But
most fulfilling part of going back.
Got it. Yes. No. I agree with the
see,
first part.
Because my answer didn't make sense. You're like, what was the question?
It made sense, then the chair happened. But I think for me, I have to agree. Like coming back for season two, it was very different for me as a character than season one. So I think for me, like one of the most fulfilling and exciting parts about coming back was being around, you know, people that we worked with, and particularly this cast and this crew. I think we all went through such a unique and incredible experience with season one that we have just a really great kind of camaraderie and friendship, and I really enjoy hanging out with everyone. So it was nice to kind of be reunited again. And also, I think, I think I'm really grateful that we were able to come back, because I think what's important was to continue the discussion from season one and make sure that we answered questions and followed people, because there is so much story after season one to be had.
Do you feel that the reaction that the show got, both, you know, positive and negative, shaped the way that you approach the next season in any way?
From what I believe, I think, you know, they definitely take everything into account, but I think that no matter what, in season one, you know, we set out to tell an honest, truthful, unflinching story, both on the screen and within the script, and I think that if we didn't try to continue doing that in season two, there wouldn't be a point of making the series, because that's what the series is, and it'd be a little, I think, a little dishonest to the show's fans and everything. I think, like, we've set out to tell this very truthful story, and we need to keep being as honest as we can. So. I don't know. I mean, like, it's we just still are telling the story we think we need to tell. I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Dylan put it pretty spot on, I think. Yeah.
So for fans of 13 Reasons Why, that's William Mullally having an exclusive chat with Catherine Langford, who plays Hannah in 13 Reasons Why, and also Dylan Minnette, who plays Clay. Nice guys.
Yeah, really. I do think that they really feel like their characters. I think it's a very well cast show, and I do think people who are fans of those classic teen shows should give it a shout, except keep in mind it does get pretty seriously graphic.
Yeah, okay. So we did have a question on 4001 from Syed, who said, what is the word on Margot Robbie's terminal?
So it did come out last week, and I do think the reason you haven't heard much about it is because people have really not liked it. It's got really low ratings. I don't think that this is the biggest hit. She's had some great films all in a row. I do think Peter Rabbit was recently brought back for a second film, so she'll have a bigger role in that. I do think she was great in Goodbye, Christopher Robin, but I'm giving Terminal a miss. But if you see it this weekend or you have seen it, please tell me if it's good, and I will go check it out.
I've run out of time to talk about my Bank Heist series on Netflix. Yeah. Evil Genius, it's called. Go check it out. We'll talk about it next time on Real Time. William Mullally, thank you so much for joining us as always.
See you next week.
Real Time.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.